Hey, what's going on? It's At The Letters for Wednesday, June 14th, 2023. Arden Zwelling here with old Benny Baltimore, who is covering the Blue Jays in beautiful Baltimore. I want to say like the Windy City, Sin City, the city that never sleeps. So I don't actually know what they...
Charm City.
Charm City? Is that what they call Baltimore?
I think so. Yeah.
Well, I would dispute that characterization personally, but that's neither here nor there. Thanks as always to our producers, Christian Ryan and Nick Andrade. And thanks as always to you for listening. You can reach us at theletters@sportsnet.ca. So Ben, you just witnessed the Baltimore Orioles bludgeon the Blue Jays 11-6 on Tuesday night. We're here recording this now Wednesday morning, and I do periodically like to check in with you on just where you're at on the belief spectrum when it comes to the Baltimore Orioles and how good they actually are, or whether they're complete frauds. So 0 to 10, from fraud to legitimately good, where are you residing right now when it comes to the Charm City Orioles?
I would go 8. Like, I think they're good. Yeah, I think they're legit. You know, their pitching staff is not great. Like, let's be honest here. They are getting by, especially when it comes to their starting pitching. Obviously, the bullpen, once you get to Yennier Cano and Felix Bautista, that's pretty elite. But, you know, the first 6-7 innings of the ball game, it's okay. But I really like their position player core. I think it's really good. Even on a night where Cedric Mullins is out, you know, they have a lot of hitters who can do some different things. Ryan Mountcastle out for this team as well. But, you know, with Gunnar Henderson hitting the way he is right now and really looking like an impact player, which he didn't for the first 6 weeks of the season, this team is pretty scary. Adley Rutschman, we know he's an MVP candidate. We know he's one of the best catchers in baseball. Then, you know, you have just complimentary good players like an Adam Frazier or like a Ramon Urias or like a Austin Hayes who can do good things for a major league team. And yeah, I think that their position player group is definitely above average, definitely playoff caliber. They'd look a lot better with an ace in the starting rotation. I think that's pretty clear. But, you know, especially when you look at their prospect depth, I don't know where you'd land here on this one, Arden, but I'm going to go 8 for Baltimore.
That is a little high for me. I'm going to reserve judgment until the trade deadline, honestly, and see what they do there. Because if they cash in a bunch of their sort of prospect capital and make some moves to bolster this lineup, and as you said, address some very clear needs to their starting pitching, then yeah, I could be up there with an 8 or even a 9, depending on what they do. But if they just have an incredibly unimpressive trade deadline, as they had an incredibly unimpressive offseason where you know, ownership clearly did not want to invest in this roster, and you know, you heard ownership even coming out talking about, oh, we overachieved, we're not gonna spend. Shouldn't you reward a group that overachieves? Like, shouldn't you actually want to support that and funnel more resources towards your big league team if you are overachieving? And if this group is actually telling you that they're better than, you know, projections would suggest that they are. But that's neither here nor there. I would dispute the lineup a little bit, because look, Henderson, Rutschman, Santander, like those guys are legit. Like, I no qualms there. But Ryan O'Hearn is the cleanup hitter on this team right now. Is he even average big leaguer? He's got like a 170 WRC plus this year. So full credit to him, full credit to the Orioles for identifying whatever they identified in him or helping him reach this new level. Pretty extensive track record though of him not being this at the big league level. I mean, Austin Hayes, who you mentioned, he's playing way above his head. Adam Frazier, the power numbers are just cannot be sustainable going forward for a guy who has never hit for power like this. I mean, even Aaron Hicks, who, like, watching the game on Tuesday, it's like a Whit Merrifield deep fly ball to center field, and there's Aaron Hicks running it down. I was like, Aaron Hicks is on the Orioles. Oh my goodness, when did this happen? And then you look it up, and since he's joined the Orioles, he's this phenomenal hitter and has totally resuscitated his season after being DFA'd by the Yankees. Does that continue? Is he going to continue being that good? I really do have some questions as to how sustainable their offense is.
Yeah, and I think all that's pretty fair. And I think at the same time, you know, we are talking about a team that right now, again, is without Cedric Mullins and without Ryan Mountcastle. So some reinforcements coming. And then the guys in the minor leagues, like a Jordan Westberg, who they just simply don't have room for, where, you know, this guy has an OPS close to 1,000 at Triple A, clearly ready for the majors, but they've got enough infielders who are producing to the point that they don't actually have to rush him up. So, you know, point taken, like it's not a totally stacked lineup, but I think when you look around baseball at some of the teams, even some of the contending teams, even some teams like the Toronto Blue Jays, like you look at their lineups and, you know, after the first four or five, there's often a bit of a drop off. There's often like a weak spot toward the bottom of the lineup. And Baltimore has that, no doubt, once you get to the Mateos of the world. But I think there's enough damage at the top. And this is a team that can play some pretty good defense as well, you know, between Rushman and between Mateo and Urias as well. I think the position player group is playoff caliber.
No, that's fair. You know, you look at the Blue Jays, like 26 right now as we sit here today on June 14th, and that includes names like Lucas, Clement, White, Francis, Hatch. I mean, that's 20%. That's like a fifth of your roster right there. So, it's no team around baseball is just purely stacked, like 1 through 26 with league average or better players. It's just not the case for anyone. And look, like Gunnar Henderson is full value, so fun to watch play right now, and he's the same age as Aurelvis Martinez. And Aurelvis Martinez right now is like repeating Double A for the Blue Jays. Like that's the biggest separator right now, I think, with the Orioles and the Blue Jays, is that like the Orioles have more coming, and they have more, as you mentioned, right on the cusp. And there's two ways that can go. Like that means those players can then be introduced to the big leagues and start impacting the Orioles at the big league level, or you can move them at the deadline and try to get controllable big leaguers somewhere else. Or, you know, even I doubt Baltimore would go like their rental avenue, but we'll see. That's why I'm kind of holding out for the deadline. I've been like wondering a little bit. I've been kicking around just how the way the AL East is breaking right now might impact what the Blue Jays do at the deadline, what their strategy will be going in to August 1st. What do you think that being pretty much out of the conversation for winning the division title and really just competing for, you hope to host a three-game wildcard series, but looking like most realistically going on the road for a three-game wildcard series. Like, how do you think that impacts how the Blue Jays approach August 1st?
I think it definitely has an impact, for sure. And, you know, you look at the separation between the Orioles and Blue Jays. As we record this, it's a six-game separation. So even if we think the Blue Jays are better, and I think the Blue Jays are better than Baltimore, like, I think the Jays are legit, too, as a contending team. I think they're better than the Orioles. But I don't think they're six games better, you know, over the course of 3.5 months. I really don't. So, you know, that means that it's going to be an uphill battle for the Blue Jays to pass Baltimore, to say nothing of the Rays. I mean, the Rays continue winning. They are, you know, obviously the favorites to win the American League East. And so that puts the Blue Jays in a position where their best chance is a wild card. So you're most likely playing for a wild card berth. And who knows at that point? I mean, it's possible they make the wild card game again and flame out again. I was looking at it the other day. I just stumbled on this. The St. Louis Cardinals, 3 years in a row, they flamed out in the wild card series. And, you know, that's not good. That doesn't make me think anything positive about the St. Louis Cardinals. It also doesn't make me think that they're a doomed franchise with, you know, although, you know, they kind of look not good this year. But they're a franchise that does a lot of things well. Sometimes you flame out in the wild card. So, you know, to answer your question, you can't give up the whole farm if you're playing for a wild card series. And even if the Blue Jays did give up the whole farm, what's on there? You know, what's in the farm right now? You've got, and I know Addison Barger is rehabbing now, making his way back toward AAA. That's a good step for the Jays. We'll see what happens with Ricky Tiedemann. He's said to be progressing. But the farm system for a team like the Orioles is way deeper. You can do way more things. I just don't know that the Jays are in a position, even if they wanted to go out and totally transform their big league roster.
And I mentioned Aurelvis earlier, Martinez, who started the year in like just unbelievable funk in April and has come out of it in a pretty significant way. Like his numbers have just progressively gone better from May through June right now. What's most encouraging, I think, is the decrease in the strikeout rate, the increase in the walk rate. great. We know how important swing decisions are for him. The raw power is there. The guy hit 30 bombs in AA last year, set a record for the New Hampshire Fisher Cats, and he's repeating the level this year. And the biggest thing the Blue Jays wanted to see was refinement in the approach and the discipline at the plate, the pitches that he's swinging at, and the pitches that he's not swinging at, the selectivity. By the end of last year, Aureliz Martinez was seeing more breaking balls than he was fastballs. That's very rare in the minor leagues. You just don't see that, but that's how much the book had gotten out on him. So that is certainly encouraging, and that helps his stock. But also, if you're the Blue Jays, you can't just be thinking about the final 2 months of 2023. You got to be thinking about, hey, we got to replace a Matt Chapman in 2024. Hey, yep. We got to think about, like, if Bo Bichette leaves in free agency, who's our shortstop going to be? Where are, like, 5 to 6 wins above replacement going to come from? If Vladimir Guerrero Jr. leaves in free agency, like, you got to think about, like, having that, the waves, quote unquote, right? That upward pressure on your roster continuing to graduate really good young players onto the big league club. Like, I don't think it's sustainable that the Blue Jays can just go out every offseason and spend $20 million AAV on a starting pitcher every year. At some point, this club's going to need to develop some starting pitching. So that is an interesting element of the push-pull as well, because if the Blue Jays wanted to dip into the what prospects they do have to trade, as you were outlining, to try to supplement and make a push towards the back half of 2023, they have to be careful not to mortgage too much of a future, which is very important for this club as well.
For sure. And you know, I think they will make trades. I think they will. And, you know, you look back at what they did last year. Whit Merrifield, for example, he's ended up being a really good pickup for this team, much, much better than what we probably would have guessed when they acquired him. And they gave up Samad Taylor and Max Castillo for him. Those are kind of org players. Samad Taylor running a lot in the Royals minor league system right now. You know, good for him, but probably not a guy that the Jays are going to absolutely, you know, rue the day they traded him. Meanwhile, they have a very capable big leaguer in Whit Merrifield helping them win every night. So that's a good trade.
Guerrero's going to cruise home as Merrifield is into second with an RBI double.
That's a trade that helps them, or helped them last year, is helping them this year. And that's the kind of move that you can make. But I tend to think that if you're going to make moves as this Blue Jays team, you probably are in a position where you have to wait a little bit longer, because there just aren't that many teams that are totally out of the playoff picture at this point in time. You've got maybe the Rockies or Nationals or A's or Royals, and just not much beyond that. So those teams that would be sellers, they have a lot of leverage, because there are a lot of other teams that are in the playoff picture that would be buyers right now. So any team that's holding on to a pretty good player, they're going to want a lot, as they should. And I just don't think the Jays, with their farm system being the way it is, I don't think they're in a position to jump the market and to totally overwhelm, let's say, the Tigers for an Eduardo Rodriguez. And so to me, that says they are going to have to wait longer. They're going to have to wait this out until July 31st, until August 1st. Maybe at that point, there are deals. I'm sure the Jays will be active. I'm sure they'll make deals. But I think until then, and we're still 6 weeks from that point, I think it's got to be internal. They have to figure this out for the most part with what they have.
Yeah, the Tigers are a good shout as a seller. I think the White Sox will likely sell off. I think the Cubs will likely sell off. But, you know, what's interesting with, like, some of those teams is, if you're the Blue Jays, are you looking for just a pure rental right now? If you're, like, say, by the end of July, basically where you are right now, like a game or two out of wildcard position, like, that changes the calculus. If you're the Blue Jays and you have, like, a 4-game lead atop the AL East, that's totally different. That's all right, let's go get some rentals, like, let's go for it and push in here. But if you're, like, in this sort of murky middle with Houston and the Yankees and the Angels are in there now, and say the Mariners surge, I think you're looking more so for controllable pieces. Like, Whit Merrifield's a good example of kind of a, like, I don't want to say he's a fringe player, because he plays every day and actually has been really important for this team, but he's not like a 4 or 5 win player, part of your core, like, yeah, massive piece of this franchise. You're looking for someone more so around the edges who you can control going forward, who you have some contractual control over in 24 and maybe even 25. Like the Whit Merrifield deal wasn't just about the last couple months of 22, is about having him in 23 as well and having him doing what he's doing right now, playing a bunch of different positions. And honestly, over the last like 3-4 weeks, being one of the better offensive contributors on this club, which says one thing about how well he's playing and another thing about how much some of the Blue Jays core pieces have been underproducing. But I think that it'll look more so like that, the deadline. Like it, I don't know if people will find that underwhelming. Certainly you're not going to see like super sexy names coming to the Blue Jays, I don't think. Like, I think it will be much more so of the Merrifield Mitch White vein than like the Jose Berríos vein, where it's a more attention grabbing move. But I agree with you that the Blue Jays will be active at the deadline, because they always are active at the deadline. This is something that they have shown us time and again.
Yeah, it's not like they're not going to make moves. They'll make moves. They need to, you know, it's a question really of how impactful they can be, how surprising. Worst case, you get someone who's kind of a bounce back candidate, someone who's underperforming. Maybe there's something underlying that you like and you see if they can bounce back. I mean, certainly there are a lot of ways you can improve this team. I think starting pitching is the most obvious, and I know we'll get to the gap in their rotation right now. They just don't have 5 starting pitchers, so that's a clear way to upgrade. You know, the bullpen, I think there's always room to upgrade the bullpen, although the bullpen's actually pretty good, so I don't think that's like where you're going to give up your top prospects. And then they could use an outfielder. They could use a bat, someone who can hit, probably right-handed, probably an outfielder, could be a utility player, could be left-handed, but I think right-handed hitting outfielders are probably where you start that search if you're the Blue Jays. And you know, on a team with a lot of veterans, on a team where, you know, Kevin Kiermaier, Brandon Belt, this is in the last week alone, before you even get to Whit Merrifield or Chapman, this is a team with a lot of guys who are 30 plus, and you need some insurance, because after August 1st, that's it. Like, you know, you run out of chances to improve your team. So they also need a bat.
Yeah, hey, say the Seattle Mariners just like keep underperforming and fall out of it and decide to sell. They got a right-handed outfield bat. I think his name's Teoscar Hernandez. He's going to be a free agent. You could trade for him.
Well hit. Down the line, and it is gone! Right into the netting for a home run, and it's the second of the afternoon for Teoscar Hernandez.
And then, you know, the Cubs as well, right? Like, things aren't really going well for them. Could, you know, they should likely be looking to sell at the trade deadline. They got a starting pitcher who's got this option. His name's Marcus Stroman.
Good pitch, Spires strikes out. Good high slider right there from Marcus Stroman to pick up his first.
Just go trade for Teoscar Hernandez and Marcus Stroman. You filled your rotation need. You got your right-handed hitting powerful outfielder. Job done.
Hey, they'd be a better team with those guys. They definitely would be. But as long as you mention them, do you think there's any chance? Because I'm sure our listeners are wondering right now.
No, I think it's a much more likely chance that those two guys are New York Yankees on August 2nd than Toronto Blue Jays.
Yeah. And I think, so the price on Stroman will be high and should be high. And it's funny, you look back to the last time he was traded, Jays didn't really get much for him. You know, Anthony Kay and Simeon Woods-Richardson, and I know Woods-Richardson ended up helping them acquire Jose Berríos. So, you know, that's something. You know, neither one of those pitchers really doing that much right now. But the Cubs, if they do trade Stroman, and they could still extend him, they will be looking for a huge haul. That's probably out of the Jays' range, I would think.
Anthony Kay, another example of the Blue Jays' failure to develop a Louis Varland type in recent years. Remember, we were talking about that a couple podcasts ago. Once again, the Blue Jays saw Louis Varland, who again like was not supposed to be a part of the Twins rotation going into the year. Like, that was their number 6, number 7 starter. That was their depth guy, developed internally, college pick, I think like Division II college, like somebody who they helped get better and turned into not a star, not a Cy Young candidate, just like a capable big leaguer, somebody who can like go out and give you 120 innings of like 4.2 ERA. The Blue Jays haven't been able to develop that guy. And Anthony Kay is another example, along with your Thomas Hatch and your TJ Zoik and your Trent Thornton and like on and on, of just pitchers who just the Blue Jays have not been able to develop into capable big leaguers. It's been a big issue for this club. Before we go to the micro, the next couple segments of the podcast, one last question on the macro, and that is, what do you think needs to happen between now and, let's say, like September 1st, for the Blue Jays to get back into postseason position, for the Blue Jays to feel good about making the playoffs, aside from obviously going outside the organization on August 1st and, you know, supplementing and adding and filling some of their holes? What do you think needs to happen between now and then for this club to be a realistic postseason contender?
Yeah, which they need to be. I mean, this is prime Bo, this is prime Vlad. You've spent a ton of money, devoted a ton of resources. This is your window. You have a lot of talented players. You've already fired the manager. You got to make it. You got six teams, six spots. It's a good field, but you got to be in that field if you're the Blue Jays. So what has to happen? I think Vlad Jr. has to hit a lot more like an MVP candidate and a lot less like Whit Merrifield, who, again, good player. Vlad's producing offensively. He's a good offensive player. They need him to be more like a great offensive player. So, you know, that's where I would start. I would say continued health. Their health has actually been pretty good. They need continued health. They need Vlad Jr. to step up. You know, not to put it all on Vlad Jr., that's obviously unfair, but if we are going to look for, you know, what levers you can pull to make this team look a lot better than it has so far, yeah, it is guys like George Springer, who, again, you want to see more power. You need to see someone kind of in beast mode if you're the Blue Jays. And, you know, aside from Bo, for the most part this season, they just haven't had that.
Yeah, I think that either your best players have to be your best players. You have to get really, like, amazingly unexpected, nice stories from within, or ideally both. And so far, the Blue Jays have kind of had neither to an extent. Like Bo has been obviously great. But as you mentioned, Vlad hasn't played up to his potential. Matt Chapman, after an absolutely torrid April, has, like, fallen off in a very significant way in the 6 weeks since. And George Springer has, like, he's kind of done the inverse of that, where he had, like, a really poor April and has actually looked a lot more like himself over the last 6 weeks. But those two just kind of cancel each other out. So, yeah, at some point, the Blue Jays are going to need, like, their best players to be phenomenal and to be the best in the world, or they're going to need some really good internal stories, some surprises. We came into this season saying, who are going to be the surprises on this team? Like, as you look at it right now, Ben, like, are you seeing any of those surprises? Any of those, like, really good stories? Any of those Ryan O'Hearns who come out of nowhere to, like, power an offense?
Oh, for a Ryan O'Hearn or two. Yeah, that's what you need. I think, like, Jose Berríos, to have him bounce back, that's great. Nate Pearson, obviously. You have guys who are doing well, but not enough of them. And ultimately, the Jays have acquired what seems to be a really, really strong core of veteran established players. And for that to click, for this team to go where it should, you need those guys to collectively, it's not on one player, but collectively, this group of position players and pitchers, these veteran guys who are making, you know, $20 million a year, for example, $25 million a year, you got to step up and contribute and make a real impact.
Totally. Let's take a closer look at some of those guys on the pitching side, on the hitting side, and so much more when we continue on At the Letters.
Listen to At the Letters ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
It continues on At the Letters. Arden Zwelling, Ben Nicholson, Smith, and Ben, as you were mentioning earlier, the Toronto Blue Jays do not have five starting pitchers. They only have four, and they presently have a five-man rotation. So that means that there is a bullpen day regularly being run by this team. We've already seen it once, and hey, went pretty well. If you combine Trevor Richards and Bowden Francis, their lines together, what they did on Saturday when the Blue Jays first ran this bullpen day, you get 5 2/3 innings pitched, 3 hits, 1 earned run, 1 walk, 10 strikeouts. Pretty good. Question now is that sustainable going forward? Can you expect that going forward? Can you put your bullpen in a position going forward, and your manager and pitching coach, by the way, where they have to be thinking ahead to, well, we can't really use Trevor Richards here because we need him to start tomorrow, or, well, we can't really throw Bowden Francis to mop up here because we need him to go 3 innings in a couple of days. What does this look like going forward?
Yeah. I mean, is it sustainable? I think we all know it's not. And, you know, I think that there's a reason that when the 30 GMs are crafting their teams in the offseason and drawing things up, literally none of them are going to come up with a four-man rotation plus bullpen day configuration. It's so far from ideal. You know, at the same time, like, could it kind of work for a few weeks? I think it kind of could. It's not great. I mean, we saw it again on Tuesday after Chris Bassitt really struggled. The Jays needed five innings from their bullpen, and so they turned to a combination of Mitch White and Thomas Hatch and Bowden Francis, and those guys allowed three runs over five innings. So, you know, it kind of works. That's maybe a preview of what we would see on either Friday or Saturday, depending on how they stack things. I sort of presume it'll be Friday. I mean, I see no real reason to do it Saturday as opposed to Friday, but, you know, we can get into that. And so it can sort of work. I guess the trickle-down effect of this is, if you're using, say, Trevor Richards as part of that combination, which they should because he's the best of those options, then it sort of means that you don't have Trevor Richards. So then somebody else has to step up into that role. And you don't have him for the day before. You don't have him for the day after. So it taxes some pretty good relief pitchers, and it puts you in a position where you're asking too much out of a guy like Adam Simber, and then boom, some of these scores get lopsided late in games.
So let's just major in the minors really quickly when it comes to Friday v. Saturday with the next bullpen day. If you did it on Friday, as you're suggesting, you've then after that got two more games against the Rangers and then three against the Marlins without an off day in there. So if you did it on Friday, you then would have to do it again on Wednesday in the finale against the Marlins. So I could see the argument for actually throwing Kevin Gausman on Friday, doing the bullpen day Saturday, and then you've just got the final four games of the trip. That way it's only one bullpen day over the next week rather than two.
That's a good point. Let's actually shift. I'm going to go to Friday. Yeah, so it makes sense to have Gausman on Friday then because it spares the bullpen that extra time.
Did he go? Yes, he did. Another strikeout for Gausman. That is five in a row.
But the compromise here, and it's just sort of the bed that you've made, is that now Kevin Gausman is pitching on 4 days rest routinely. And look, it's Kevin Gausman. He's an ace. That's fine. But we've seen that he's a lot better when he has that extra day of rest. So you're not really getting the benefit of that off day that you had leading into this three city road trip, which, like, by the way, against, you know, an Orioles team that has performed much better than the Blue Jays in the AL East this year, against a Rangers team with an offense that's been gangbusters, against a surprisingly good Marlins team next week at the end of this trip, when the Blue Jays are going to be all road weary and tired and wanting to go home and kind of at their wit's end. So this is a challenging stretch for the Blue Jays that they're playing right now, and they're going to be asking their starters to go on 4 days rest, which is normal, which is fine, which plenty of teams do, but it would be a lot more optimal if you had a fifth starter who you trusted and you could have used the benefit of Monday's off day to buy everyone an extra day at this point in the season where workloads are increasing.
For sure. It is very far from optimal with Gausman in particular. You would rather give him that extra day. But as you outlined, if he's able to pitch on Friday, that gives the bullpen maybe a little bit more breathing room, even if it is asking more of him. Now, just a quick aside on the Marlins, let's not put them on a pedestal. I'm not saying that to you in particular. And they are in playoff position. I mean, they've done well so far. But I think what we've just witnessed is the best 68 games of the Miami Marlins season. I think they are about to go steeply downhill. They aren't good. They are way over their Pythagorean record. They have a negative run differential. They have two good offensive players in Jorge Soler and Luis Arias. Like, this is the Marlins, people. Like, let's not give them too much credit here. The Blue Jays should win this series.
Ben, believer in the Orioles, not sold on the Marlins.
No, they're not good. The Jays should win that series.
I'm going to put you down for that. Yeah, it's, you know, we can enter any kind of series, any kind of stretch and say, oh, on paper, it looks this way. But, like, it's baseball. It very rarely plays out the way you would expect it to. Like, baseball is just, it's just a weird sport, man, where weird stuff happens and you just have to be used to that. Like, the Oakland Athletics are one of the worst rosters assembled in recent memory. Like, I don't think that the Oakland Athletics could beat like the LA Dodgers double A team in a 7-game series. And yet they've won 7 in a row. Yep. And they just beat the 48-22 Tampa Bay Rays twice consecutively, while all the fans in their building are chanting, sell the team. So baseball's weird, man. Weird stuff happens. The New York Mets have scored 5.25 runs per game over their last 8. So like over the course of 162, if you score 5.25 runs per game, you're one of the best offenses in the history of the sport, if not the best. They've scored 5.25 over the last 8, and they lost 7 of those games. It's baseball's weird, man. Weird stuff happens.
For sure. And like, if the Blue Jays get swept by the Marlins, it's not like their season is over. These things can happen. Weird things happen in baseball all the time. I'm just saying, like, you know, there's no reason for the Blue Jays or anyone around the team to go into that series thinking that, oh, like the Marlins are really good. Because, yeah, I mean, they've played well. But again, they have just had their best 70 games of the season.
It gets back to like what we were talking about in the first segment. And I get this question all the time. I'm sure you do too. And it's just some variation of, are they going to win? And like, what's going to happen is essentially the question. And I don't know, Ben. Like, I really don't know what's going to happen over the remaining 90 games or whatever it is. Go ahead. You look like you got something.
I just totally agree. You know, we have no idea. The Blue Jays legitimately could win the World Series. They could also miss the playoffs, and it could be really bad. We just have no idea.
And neither of those outcomes would surprise me, because it's baseball and crazy stuff happens. But yeah, I really don't know what's going to happen going forward. I know like what's likely and what's unlikely. I think it's unlikely that the Blue Jays win the AL East. Extremely unlikely. But I do think there are like, I don't know, 4-6% of outcomes in which they do. So that means that I believe there's like a 95% chance that they don't. But there is still that little shred in which they do. And I'm prepared for that. Like, it could happen. The Rays could collapse, and like the Yankees could not get healthy, and the Orioles could go away, and the Blue Jays could surge. I wouldn't be surprised. I also wouldn't be surprised if, as you said, the Blue Jays suffer some like devastating injuries going forward, and some of this underperformance continues, and they don't have the depth to supplement it. And it's like the Blue Jays finish the season 5 games out of the third wildcard spot. I could also see that, and I also wouldn't be surprised, because like that's a totally possible outcome. What I think is most likely, what's most likely going to happen, I'm not saying this is going to happen, what's most likely is they continue to ebb and flow. So they continue to have like 8-2 stretches and 3-7 stretches and like 12-3 stretches and 4-11 stretches, and they enter September somewhere around that third wild card spot, whether they're occupying it, whether they're a game or two back of it, whether they're a game up on it, somewhere around there. And then the final 28 games in September, whatever the number is what's really decisive. And they just need to perform a game or two better than the teams they are competing with for that second, that third wild card spot over that stretch of September. And then if they do that and they finish as a postseason team, they likely go to Target Field or Camden Yards or Yankee Stadium for a 3-game wild card series where you're just essentially flipping a coin 3 times. I think that's what's most likely to happen.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I mean, honestly, that would make for a pretty compelling month of baseball. Like, it would be it would be pretty memorable. It would be pretty dramatic. You know, that's kind of the model that Major League Baseball has created right here, where teams that are good but not great, which the Blue Jays definitely fall in that category based on what we've seen so far, teams that are good but not great have really interesting seasons and have really wide ranges of outcomes. And honestly, like, as an entertainment product, it's pretty good so far. Like, they're pretty interesting. I find them pretty compelling. And if this continues, and if September is full of games against the Yankees and Rays with high stakes and full stadiums, I mean, I don't know. That's pretty interesting. The only thing is, like, it might not lead to a great outcome for the Jays. So you got to be prepared for disappointment. But that's the case for 29 out of 30 teams in the course of a season. So being disappointed is part of the nature of being a baseball fan. And I'm not trying to sound negative in that. You have to find positives in the course of a season, or else you're just indulging in an exercise of self-flagellation. But, you know, I think that there is a likelihood for every team that you are going to end up finding yourself you know, on the outside looking in, and someone else is hoisting the trophy.
Yeah, and like as a fan, if you knew what was going to happen, well, then why would you watch? Like, why? What would be the point of all this if you know what's gonna happen? There's no point to it. So, yeah, I mean, all those outcomes that you just outlined, like, pretty interesting to me. I'll talk about that. I'll write about that.
Yeah,
that sounds fun. That sounds interesting. That honestly sounds pretty compelling. That's something that I would like to follow. It's very hard to pivot back to bullpen days from this.
We zoomed out too far.
I know, but it was just kind of interesting to follow that road. Let me ask you one more question before we break and talk about the bats. And it's kind of been rattling around in my head a little bit lately. And that is, like, what is the upper bound limit of Trevor Richards? How far could the Blue Jays push what they're getting from Trevor Richards? Because you see him go out and open a game and go three innings and like strike out 7 of the 10 batters he's faced. And I don't have it in front of me, but like double digit swinging strikes. I mean, Kevin Gausman didn't have double digit swinging strikes in his last start. And Kevin Gausman has one of the best pitches in baseball. Like, we're talking about a guy with an absolutely elite changeup that hitters just cannot lay off of, despite the fact he never throws it in the zone. Like, that is how good it is.
Got him. Another chase on a change, and that's 5 consecutive batters he has struck out.
This changeup has been ridiculous. This is as good as he's thrown it all year long. With the depth, the movement, the velocity, everything is really clicking for Trevor.
How far could the Blue Jays push this? Could Trevor Richards throw 4 innings? Could he throw 60, 65 pitches his next time out? If the Blue Jays are really in a tough spot for that bullpen day on the weekend, like, what? Or have the Blue Jays kind of reached that upper bound limit and they've got Trevor Richards like stretched pretty much as far as they're going to want him to go?
I think they're close to it. I think he could throw 4 if there's a game where he's through 3 innings on 38 pitches, which we've seen before. Yeah, you could throw him out there for a 4th. I don't think you want to be in a position, if you're the Blue Jays, where you're sitting there counting on Trevor Richards to go 4 or 5 innings. If it happens once or twice, great. And so in that sense, I think there's a little bit more upside than what we've seen, because he's now stretched out to about 50 pitches, and you can conceivably get through 4 innings on 50 pitches if you're super efficient. Yeah, I think we're close to the upper limit. If he ends up being a guy who throws 90 innings for this team, I mean, what a great season that would be for Richards.
What a weird season, considering like where we would have put him entering it. Like,
yeah.
Full credit to him. What he's done is exceptional. Making that tweak of just ditching the breaking ball and becoming like a Devin Williams-esque, like, change up 60% of the time kind of guy. It's really worked for him. You dig into it more and it's like, well, this is a pitcher he throws way more pitches outside the zone than in the zone. Like, he has one of the lowest zone rates in baseball and one of the highest chase rates in baseball. At some point, does an opposition just kind of play the, well, you're going to get to 4 balls before you get to 3 strikes game, and just lay off of everything and see if he walks batters? Or do they do the, we're zoning up like belt high, anything belt up, okay, you can swing, anything belt down, auto take? And like, at some point, does that adjustment get made, and is that approach taken to him? And then how does it look when he's only a 2-pitch pitcher, having ditched the breaking ball? Like, this is the thing. Trevor Richards was a starter prior in his career. He was a starter with the Marlins, a little bit with the Rays. And there's a reason why he's not a starter anymore, because he didn't have that third pitch. And like, Matt Bushman could not get him to develop this breaking ball last year, to the point that the Blue Jays just ditched it. And now he's purely fastball changeup. But that's why I would question just how much further you could stretch Trevor Richards beyond the one trip through the order that you've already gotten him up to.
Yeah, I think we're getting close to that limit. I mean, you wonder, and this is getting greedy, but you wonder, like, could he flip in a first pitch breaking ball for strikes on occasion? I mean, it's a big ask. These are major league hitters. You hang one up there, you might see it over the right field wall. So, you know, I think that's something to keep an eye on. But it's interesting. And, you know, this is maybe an example of the Zwelling Pro scouting department zoning in on a potential weakness, right? Like, and this is what teams would do if you get to a playoff series, and it is the Orioles against the Blue Jays for the wild card series. Pretty sure the Orioles, well, I'm not sure how big their pro scouting department is anymore, but I'm pretty sure the Orioles, in some form or fashion, would identify the fact that Richards throws a ton of pitches outside the zone.
Yeah, absolutely. And if the Blue Jays are at a point where they're starting Trevor Richards in a wild card series, once again, I would be very compelled by how we got to that point. I would like to follow that journey with this team. We're going to step away, but when we come back, we got to talk offense because it is one of the most confounding things about this ball club. We're going to get into that when we continue on At the Letters. Okay, Ben, some numbers for you. The Toronto Blue Jays have a .265 batting average as a team on the season, second highest in MLB. They have a .334 on base percentage as a team, third highest in MLB. Their offense has produced a 111 WRC plus, fifth highest in MLB. By batting average, by on base percentage, by weighted runs created plus, a top five offense, perhaps as good as top three. But the Blue Jays, in terms of converting that offense into runs, runs per game across MLB, 11th, 4.6 runs per game. Explain to me how a team can have a top three batting average and on base percentage, a top five weighted runs created plus, but a middle of the pack runs per game.
Well, it's a great question. I suspect you already are well aware of the answer to it. And many of our listeners probably are as well, but I will answer it. And I think that essentially it's small sample. It's noise. I mean, the Blue Jays have a very good offense. They have not performed as a very good offense, but really there is sequencing that goes into that that is not going to be predictive of what happens. So the Blue Jays are more likely to continue performing as a top 5-7 offense moving forward, maybe even better than that. And the numbers bear that out. If you look broadly across many, many teams in many, many years, the teams that do the best are the ones that have the highest WRC plus. Now, I still think they need more offense because this is an old group and there is not enough depth behind the starting nine. So there are questions around this offense, and I don't think it's beyond reproach. I think they need help, but the struggles with runners in scoring position, for example, it's just not predictive of what's going to happen.
It's like we were talking about a few weeks ago with the Blue Jays being among the league leaders in left on base. To me, that's a good thing. Like, to me, that correlates strongly with being a good offense, and that suggests that the Blue Jays will score a bunch of runs going forward. I think if you go back and you look at the left on base leaders from 2022, 2021, recent seasons, I think you're going to see a lot of Dodgers and a lot of Padres and a lot of really good teams at the top of those leaderboards. Like, you don't really see a lot of bad teams up near the top of that statistic. So like, I agree with you that sequencing is an issue. I think the misfortune with runners in scoring position is an issue. Those are things that I would expect to turn around in a big way. You look at it, the Blue Jays are bottom six in terms of batting average with runners in scoring position, bottom four in terms of on-base percentage with runners in scoring position, bottom six in terms of slugging percentage with runners in scoring position. So for one reason or another, the club has not performed and taking advantage of those opportunities. Is that just dumb luck? Is that just noise rather than signal? Is that players trying to do too much in big moments? Is that a lack of clutchness? Is that a combination of all of the above? I don't know. But when I see the process v the results, I'm willing to bet on the process, which means I'm willing to also potentially be wrong. Like, these things could just continue for the rest of the season, and it might just play out this way for the next 3.5 months. And we're sitting here saying, like, man, that offense just never came around and it just never happened for them. But just looking at how things have traditionally, or at least how things have typically played out over the history of the game, I'm going to bet on the club that is second in batting average, third in on-base percentage, fifth in weighted runs created plus, coming out of this offensive funk.
Yeah, for sure. I think if the Blue Jays struggle to score runs from here to the end of the season, it'll be because they got hurt and their questionable depth got exposed, not because the group of players that they have as a starting nine or a starting 10, 11 players is inadequate in some way. And I think there's some aspect of pressing, some aspect of expanding the zone. I think that's real. At the same time, that's not going to turn Vlad Guerrero Jr. into, you know, a completely inept hitter. It's going to impact his numbers to some extent, but he's still, among many other players on this team, should be expected to be impact offensive players. Doesn't mean there aren't big questions around these guys individually and that there aren't ways to improve individually. But I think as a collective, this is a good offense. Maybe not quite as good as it was in years past, but it's a good offensive team.
And like the inverse of this is the Orioles offense, which is performing very similarly to Toronto's in terms of batting average, OBP, like all these stats I've been citing, very similarly in terms of slug even. But what they're doing is hitting much better with runners in scoring position, like all their stats with runners in scoring position, much, much higher. They have had much more timely hitting, like they're top 10, in some cases top five in most statistical categories with runners in scoring position. That's why the Orioles are scoring 5.1 runs per game. They're scoring a half run more than the Blue Jays are. And I would expect those their runs per game to like decrease. And I would expect the Blue Jays runs per game to increase over time because of the process and because of what we've been talking about. The Blue Jays have the fourth lowest strikeout rate in baseball this year. To me, like strikeout rate, walk rate, those are things that are predictive. Like those are things I'll take to the bank. And the fact the Blue Jays are striking out at a 20% rate, fourth lowest in baseball, that suggests to me like they're a good offense and that things are going to be better going forward. I think if we wanted to see a really big swing in the short term, it would be the power numbers coming back around, because Blue Jays has been like middle of the pack in slugging percentage, home runs, like isolated power, like they're right around league average and all those. So if, say, George Springer wanted to hit like five home runs in 2 weeks, if Vladimir Guerrero Jr. wanted to have one of those months where he hits like nine home runs, if Matt Chapman wanted to rediscover the power stroke that we saw from him in April, that'd be big. We're sitting here on June 14th and Bo Bichette leads this team in home runs with 14, and Dalton Varsho is second with 11. Like, it's kind of strange to see guys like Chapman, Springer, Guerrero trailing those guys. I think that's where the biggest swing can come from, is just a few more homers, particularly with runners on base, because as John Schneider is fond of saying, it's really hard to defend the 2 and 3 run homer.
Yeah, some would say impossible, and they'd be right. Yeah, I think the Jays need some more of that. It's wild, right? You look at the numbers there that you just cited, 14 homers for Bo, so they have one player on pace for a 30-homer season. Like, that's not a lot when you consider the amount of talent and power and established hitters on this team. It's pretty wild. And then you think about, okay, Kevin Biggio, okay, and he's probably the guy who stands to get more playing time when a guy like Brandon Belt is on the injured list. Kevin Biggio is the one who's in there. Now, has Kevin Biggio had a good offensive season on the whole? No. But does Kevin Biggio trail Vlad Guerrero Jr. in home runs by 3?
3-1, and he hits it high and deep to right, and he's got another home run. Well, he got the count in his favor, and he zeroed in on another one, Joe, and it's the same result.
Yeah, he does. It's that close. That's not what you want to see. You do not want to see a struggling Kevin Biggio 3 away from your franchise player in home runs. Now, obviously, there's a lot more to offense than that. Vlad Jr. keeps putting the bat on the ball, keeps getting base hits. That helps. He posts every day. He plays, for the most part, good defense. And, you know, there's a lot of things he does well. But, yeah, you know, this is a team that needs some more power, and they would really benefit from that. And maybe Biggio can be part of that. He's certainly connected for some huge swings in recent days, with the 3-run homer on Sunday and then the pinch hit home run on Tuesday. So trending in the right direction. They could use that from Biggio. They could use that from others as they move ahead here.
And the mistake people are making is saying, well, it's because of the subtractions. It's because they don't have Teoscar Hernandez anymore. Well, like, Teoscar Hernandez has been a league average hitter this year. He has 11 home runs this year. As I just said, Dalton Varsho also has 11 home runs. So it's really a push. You lose Lourdes Gurriel Jr. He hit 5 home runs all of last season. It's not like he was the big slugger for the Blue Jays last year. He's had more this year, yes, but you haven't subtracted a ton of power in Lourdes because he wasn't like providing a ton of power last year. It really is, to me, like guys like Springer, Chapman, and Guerrero, who you're looking to for more power. And I think that process is a big way of getting to power. It's swing decisions. It's what you're swinging at and what you're laying off of. Seen really good swing decisions from George Springer over the last 6 weeks. I think Vladimir Guerrero Jr. has been inconsistent with his swing decisions, particularly pre-two strikes. You get to two strikes and you got to kind of do what you got to do, right? You got to defend the plate. You got to expand your zone a little bit. You'd rather go down swinging than go down looking at like that pitch that's like shadow zone, a ball width off that some umpire rings you up on. Like you got to be aggressive on those. But pre-two strikes, I think Vladimir Guerrero Jr. has not made great, or he's been inconsistent, I'd say,
yeah,
in his swing decisions. And like Matt Chapman, who was making really good swing decisions in April, he's regressed a little bit in that regard. And you're seeing him be a little bit in between. So I think that if Chapman and Guerrero can get their sort of consistency with swing decisions back up and back towards what we're seeing from George Springer lately, I do think that those players are going to get better pitches to hit. They're going to get themselves into more favorable counts. They're going to get more mistakes, more cookies. And I do think that they're going to punish them, but it just might take us some time to get there.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, you look at Vladdy in particular, he is expanding a little more, swinging a little more, chasing, you know, just a tad more than you'd like. But it's interesting. I was looking at his numbers this morning as far as, you know, line drives, ground ball rate, fly ball rate. Those numbers are pretty similar to what we saw, not last year, but in 2021 when he hit 48 homers, when he was an MVP finalist. And the same applies to his strikeout rate is really good. He's obviously drawing fewer walks. Pitchers aren't totally pitching around him the way they were a couple years ago. But it's interesting, and I don't know if you have an explanation for this one, but because I certainly don't. But you look at his percentage of fly balls that become home runs, and in 2021, it was 26.5%. So a quarter, more than a quarter of the fly balls that he hit became home runs. This year, that number is cut in half. It's 12.3%. So basically, an eighth of the fly balls that he hits are becoming home runs this year. And we're looking now at a player who in his last month plus has two home runs. Set aside the home, road stuff, anywhere you're playing. The last month plus, Vlad Jr. has only two home runs. So it's just kind of weird because he is getting base hits, but we're not seeing a lot of fly balls become home runs for Vlad.
To me, that's more noise than signal.
Yeah,
really. Maybe. Like I don't have a better explanation for it. And if somebody does, like, send it my way. I'm open to hearing it. I'm very open-minded to these things. But I look at the stuff that I put value in. So like expected weighted on base average, and Vladdy has improved dramatically from last season. Expected slugging has improved dramatically. His hard hit rate is up by like 6 points. His average exit velo is even up. Like, it's barreling everything. Launch angle's fine. Like, everything looks good under the hood. It's just not leading to results. It's very similar to the Blue Jays offense, because in a lot of ways, as Vladdy goes, the Blue Jays offense goes. Yeah. Because he's really their most talented hitter. Like him and Bo Bichette, like those are their best hitters. So if those guys are going to perform at elite levels, Blue Jays offense is going to perform at an elite level. If those guys are going to scuffle and slump, Blue Jays offense likely to scuffle and slump. So I just look at all the process stuff, all the indicators, all the under the hood stuff with Vlad, and I'm still in the same position I was in 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, where I'm like, I'm just waiting for it to break out, because
yeah,
what we've seen from similar hitters, or from, you know, from people who have put up numbers like this in the past, is that it does come around and that the numbers do follow. I just can't tell you exactly when that's going to happen.
Yeah, because, you know, you do look at those numbers, like they do tell the story of a really good hitter. You look at the most barrels in Major League Baseball. Like you said, the launch, it's not that he's hitting everything into the ground. The launch angle is pretty good for Vladdy. So yeah, I tend to think that better results are coming and that he is probably going to turn a corner and have a stronger finish to this season. I do think that there's an aspect of this where it's been a grind for Vladdy this last month or so to only connect for a couple home runs. So I don't think that being in that headspace probably helps, but he's a very, very talented hitter. This isn't the first time he's gone through some sort of slump at the major league level. He's come out of it before, and I would certainly expect that to happen again.
Vladimir Guerrero Jr. lines one to deep left field, and it's gone. Home run number 9 on the season for Vladdy.
If anything, like, I would tell the Blue Jays to follow what Dalton Varsho has been doing lately. Very quietly, Dalton Varsho has been a really strong hitter for the last 2 weeks, 3 weeks. Similar to Whit Merrifield, like, those two guys have been really sound, and we're probably not talking about it enough. Definitely not with Whit enough. Like, that guy has actually been really legit for a while now. But with Varsho, I look at some of the stuff under the hood that he's done for the last couple of weeks. I don't have the current numbers. I pulled them for the broadcast on the weekend, but they would be similar to this point. Like, he cut 10 points off his chase rate. Like, he was expanding way less. He was whiffing way less than he had been. And that was really showing up in his power numbers in a very meaningful way. You saw the isolated slugging go up, the OPS go up. And obviously, when you're whiffing less and chasing less, the K rate went down by quite a bit. So I've been really impressed with, like, with his process and his approach over the last few weeks. So I would say, you know, for any Blue Jays hitters to look at what Varsho is doing and try to emulate that, because I do think that that stuff leads to results over time.
Yeah. And Varsho continues. I mean, he's having those great results and just continues doing, I know it's such a broadcaster, baseball writer cliche, but he really does do the little things really well. There still continues to be that focus, that intensity that he brings. His OPS plus for the season, I believe, is 99 as we record this. So he's been a league average hitter who's playing great defense, running the base as well. So Varsho certainly looking like a really good piece for this Blue Jays team as they move ahead.
Yeah, I think I said it before and I'll say it again. Like, Dalton Varsho is a guy you want on your team.
Oh, yeah.
In a lot of different ways. And Ben, I'm glad we found a way to round out with something positive here. And was like a little bit of a dour stretch for the Blue Jays here. It'll be interesting to see what we're talking about next week after this road trip and how things kind of go through Texas and Miami. Like, I remain open to being surprised. Like, I think most realistically, the Blue Jays go like 4-5 on this trip and are like, yep, we're okay with that considering the quality of competition and like what our grind, our schedule has been like recently. But if they came out of it 6-3, I also wouldn't be that surprised either, because baseball's a crazy game.
If they sweep the Marlins, you heard it here first.
That's right. He's Ben Nicholson Smith. I'm Arden Zwelling. Our producers are Christian Ryan and Nick Andrade. You can email us at theletters@sportsnet.ca. I want to thank you all for listening as always, and we'll talk to you next time on At The Letters.